sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Bank of Japan is slapped. Gold takes a tumble, and earnings season starts with a whimper. We got lots to talk about today, a big week coming. All this and much, much more on episode number 309 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Howdy to you. This is Andrew Horowitz, and thanks for joining me today. You know, I was thinking about, wow, wouldn't it be a really apropos to put the music theme song of The Twilight Zone for the opening of this episode, because last week, it's kind of like The Twilight Zone I felt like I was in when we saw markets being so resilient to such negative headlines. And I was thinking, is it simply because we have the situation where the week prior was down and now it's an opportunity to buy the dips, and what the heck, let's just get in there. We know that we have the Fed at our backs and a safety net. We know that we have the Bank of Japan doing what they're going to do, and dozens of countries around the world and central banks doing whatever they can to fund all sorts of money into the economies that just seem not to be able to really catch any fire. Growth has been, sub 3% for the most part on developed countries around the world. And we're even seeing a lot of the emerging markets start to slip. We're going to see what happens to the results with the results of China's GDP print that comes out a little bit after we actually post and publish this particular episode. But, at the same time, you have to wonder, was last week a kind of a resilient market that states that, hey, you know what? When you have bad news and markets can really plow ahead and really not get shaken out and all sorts of bad things happen, corrections that would come, then it's actually a great market. It's a bull market, and don't even think twice about it. So it's the reaction to the news, not the news, that really makes for whatever market is in the trend. Or on the other hand, can we look at it as a last gasp where investors are kind of like plowing in no matter what because they think they're going to miss out on something and they want to just simply get in at any point moving along the range of dates? It doesn't matter. It's Monday, it's Tuesday, it's Wednesday. When markets are down, let's get in. Markets are up, hey, we'll put a little less in. Markets down, let's get in. And we have seen a really interesting change in sentiment when it comes to retail investors. And we've talked about this, that we've seen inflows into mutual funds and ETFs this year in 2013 actually be relatively good. We've seen over the last several years that there hasn't been that kind of situation, whereas we've seen a total change in whether it's a capitulation or whether it's just a change in sentiment, whether it's the fact that housing has recovered a bit, whether it's the fact that, now there's a belief that the Fed's going to be there forever. Even last week when we saw the Fed meeting minutes that were released accidentally a day early, and the next day we saw that instead of the 2 o'clock or so release, well, all of a sudden it's going to be a 9 o'clock release of this. And I'm like, what's going on here? When I saw that pop up, we got big flashing lights on the Bloomberg monitor and said, hey, there's going to be a release of the minutes at 9 instead. And I'm thinking, what? Why is that? Well, as it turns out, if you haven't been following this, there was an accident, there was a leak, there was a miscommunication of when things will go out, and a staffer at the Fed sent out the minutes early to about 25 or 30 different sources, including news agencies, as well as banks. Now, the news really, if you think about it, if you didn't, I'll tell you a little bit about it, basically said that, hey, the economy's doing what it's doing and it's nothing great. There wasn't a lot of news in there, but basically they did say that they're, they're kind of looking for an exit policy and an exit stance of what's going to happen when they have to start slowing down purchases. And there was some dissension about the current amount of bond purchases they're having and the zero interest rate policy. And there was other that were really just, you know, saying, hey, it should last, you know, the 5 years. And, you know, if you really kind of took that and you did have advanced knowledge of that, what would you have done with it? Well, probably you would have said that, wait a second, the Fed is going to be backing down, at least they're talking about backing down sometime in the future, which is something they don't usually do. Maybe I should not be buying stocks right now. It could be the time when we're going to see something start rolling over a little bit here. And at the same time, you know, maybe I should start thinking about scaling back on the bonds that I own, or maybe short the bond market, especially the long bonds, because, you know, the Fed's going to stop buying. And they're the majority of the purchases of treasuries these days. Maybe there's something there. Well, you'd been right on one hand and wrong on the other. The bonds did sell off on that, and there was a bit of a rise. You could have caught a little bit of that by either shorting TLT or going long TBT. And if you did so, you would have made some money that day, and that would have been great. Now, stocks, on the other hand, rallied. For what reason? I can't tell you. Was it the continuation of the Bank of Japan constantly talking about their, you know, the stimulus program and reaffirming it and coming out with these discussions and the yen continuing to fall? Whatever the reason was, it was a really interesting market, you know, back to the Twilight Zone discussion. We saw retail sales fell more than expected, down 0.4%. And we saw the continuation of the gang over in North Korea talking about their nuclear capabilities and their, you know, clearing out embassies. They're talking about a certain date. They're talking about, you know, launching. And they have all sorts of television inside of Korea. They have television that shows a ballistic missile being fired from Korea and hitting actually the east coast of the United States, which is kind of interesting because that's a long way away when they come from the left to the right. And, you know, from all the way from they're going, if you look at a map, if you look at a global map, it looks like it's all the way west to east. And that's a long flight. I've done those flights, by the way, and they're long, you know, 20 hours or so. I'm not sure within that period of time how they think that, number one, they could actually reach that, because I don't think they have the capability. But the second thing is how it's not going to be shot down prior. So we've already seen that the Navy has scrambled boats, and we've seen ships going out into the Hawaii and the Guam area. So that's their side of the story. What we really think is going to happen is something probably totally different, but nonetheless, we have that. We have the cyber situation. All this is kind of bubbling up, and really the economics weren't great, and the earnings news out of last week really was at best lukewarm, with Alcoa reporting and JP Morgan, and you know, we saw some really negative news on PC shipments last week that took down, for example, Microsoft down 5% in one day on Thursday. That was a pretty substantial move for Microsoft. And a lot of it's being blamed on the fact that there's, you know, not a real great uptake of their Windows 8 OS. So what's happening there is that there's a lot of controversy about, you know, Microsoft and what's going to happen. Because basically the Windows OS, if you think about it, the Windows 8, was really, it really is a more of a kind of a, I guess it's a statement that they can compete in the personal space as well as the institutional space and the corporate environment, and a direct attempt to get in on Apple's turf. But that doesn't really seem to be paying off too well. And you got to think about the fact that Microsoft really does own the corporate space. They should just stay there and really work on those products. I don't think that I would actually install Windows 8 if it's just really nothing more than a smaller footprint with a better, you know, GUI, graphical user interface, or maybe not better, but a redesigned that is, you know, much more interactive, and you can use it for touchscreen and all that, versus Windows 7, which is, I find, to be a very stable product that is probably the best they've had ever. And I just don't see where their thinking is with this, of how it's going to really be a big hit with, you know, institutional corporate. But nonetheless, the entire PC industry sold off pretty dramatically, and the peripheral-related companies that are involved in the PCs also sold off dramatically, because sales are probably the worst they've been in, you know, in a decade or more. Now, let's focus on a few things that are important. In the prior week, we saw that the jobs numbers were, you know, messy. You want to say that this is a one-off, or the fact is that you know, we know that the unemployment rate is dropping because of the labor participation rate. Okay, fine. We had that, compartmentalize it, put it aside, moving along. We saw a really weak print, though, on the actual number of people that were hired. And we saw that also banks are laying off. We saw that retail has been laying off. We saw that we're seeing a number of companies announce that they're going to be laying off people. Yeah, some people that are being hired here, there. But those numbers are not impressive. I mean, talking about, you know, the big excitement that Apple is hiring in the U.S. and it's like under 100 people, and Ford is going to hire people. It's like 300 people. And I mean, we're not talking about big numbers that really are meaningful when it comes to the amount of people that are unemployed at this point. So construction has been doing better. We know that. And there's a bit of a, in certain areas, in the hot, quote unquote, hot areas, there's actually a labor shortage when it comes to construction workers. But overall, we've been seeing just a kind of a pace that hasn't really been picking up. It's been kind of holding its own when it comes to the unemployment and the employment rolls. That was kind of discounted entirely coming into Monday. It was like Monday, there was a whole different sentiment from the week prior. The week prior was kind of negative, and, you know, on top of it all, it was this really kind of ugly situation. But then we saw some import-export numbers out of China, which you can kind of, you can stand on either side of it and say, hey, that was really good from one side, but it wasn't what the expectations were. And you could stand on the import and say, oh, that's pretty ugly. And, you know, and then you kind of get back to, again, once again, what was it all about? In my opinion, it was the yen. They're selling the yen. They're buying something else. They're buying stocks in the United States. They're buying bonds in Europe are actually doing pretty well. It's because there's been a big move out of Japanese assets at any cost. Because right now what you're finding is that the government has clearly said that they're going to basically be devaluing their currency and doing what they can over the next, couple of years to bring inflation up. And by doing that, it spooks the crap out of people that are holding assets in yen. And that's a problem. So what we're finding is that we are seeing this kind of movement out of the Japanese markets, or the Japanese-based asset classes, those that are held in yen, into anything else. And that includes U.S. stocks. And I think that was kind of what's been going on right now. And it's not the fundamentals. It's not the economic underpinnings of what we're seeing right now. It's not the earnings by any means. It's not expectation, I think, for a blowout number, but it's an artificially built up market because of a reallocation of assets from one currency base to another, or to several. Now, when you look at the European situation, you say, well, why are you putting money over there? Well, if you can only get 0.3% interest on Japanese bonds, and you can get 4 or 5 on some European bonds, is it worth the risk? Well, yeah, to a degree. I mean, so that the companies that were holding the Japanese bonds that they had to, or at least that was a big part of their portfolio, like some of the insurance companies, got absolutely trashed the prior week because bonds were all over the place. And this big concern that Japan is really going to such an extreme that it may backfire on the bonds. How much lower can the bonds go, even if the Bank of Japan continues to purchase bonds like the Fed is doing? How low can it go? Now, because you're going to possibly have a credit write-down or a credit drop from the major agencies with the fact that their debt is expanding exponentially and they're weakening their currency and, you know, all the things that go along with that, that's a concern and that's an issue when it comes to thinking about what's happening with Japanese bonds. Will they continue to sell off? We're going to talk about that in 1 second. I have some ideas there. And at the same time, you have to say, well, again, the alternatives are, you know, there's not that many, so we might as well be invested in the U.S. Now, what happens when, you know, there was a recent earthquake just over the weekend in Honshu again? What if there's another repatriation requirement of money into yen? Well, they're going to lose a lot of money because the yen has dropped so significantly. And if they didn't get their money out way prior, you know, if it starts moving up, well, that's a problem. And already we've seen, as I talked about, and it was absolutely destined to happen, that the U.S. was going to start getting a little cranky with the Japanese stimulus package because it's really bringing up the value of the dollar quite significantly and causing the U.S. to have a major competitive disadvantage when it comes to Japanese products that are similar. So, over the weekend, there was some commentary out of the U.S. and other countries, by the way, that they're going to be watching, and they think that they need to be careful, and Japan needs to be careful to talk down the yen and not to focus on a devaluation of their currency, rather to focus on economic growth through monetary stimulus program and not targeting the yen value. Now, the yen traders have been just piling on and making tons of money on the short position. And Friday, when kind of the weekend was coming, there was the G20 meeting that was going to start and some commentary there. Already we started to see the yen turn around and the yen rise. Now, you could play that a variety of different ways. You could play it through an ETF like FXY for the long side of the yen. You could do a future like a JY, JYM13, JYM3. You know, that's kind of an interesting situation that's brewing here. You could also look at the bonds. If, in fact, you believe that long-term the bonds are – there's just no way that the bonds are going to be able to maintain this high-value, low-interest rate in Japan because a lot of money is flooding out, and the fact that long-term there's going to be some kind of a credit move on them and they just can't sustain this, you could look at things. There's a couple of ETFs that are actually interesting to look at. They're power shares, and there's an inverse Japanese – government bond, the futures, put in an ETN, JGBS. There's also a three-time inverse Japanese bond. If you're a trader, it's JGBD. Now, what will happen here is that if, in fact, Japanese bonds go down because there's a sale of them, you know, selling going on and interest rates start rising ever so slightly over there, and we have seen a lot of volatility there, I'll tell you, right after the announcement that came from Japan about their monetary stimulus, I mean, bonds went haywire. At first they went, I mean, they screamed down. And then they came back up pretty strong. So what we're finding that is this could be an interesting place because this could be a point that markets decide rather than the government on really what the valuation of these bonds are. So consider those. Look at those. If you want to just play the single short, it's a JGBS or JGBD for the three time, okay? Japanese government bond, 1 in 3. Let's take a quick break for a second, and I want to talk about some of the earnings that are coming up. I want to talk about the bird flu in a moment. We'll talk about gold and what's going on there. That's really interesting. But before I would do that, I want to talk about GoToMeeting, who sponsors this episode. And GoToMeeting, if you haven't had the opportunity, you hear me talk about it all the time, this is your opportunity to check out the great program, the great ability for you to actually have a meeting online with essentially just no fuss, no mess, no problem, no major downloads and installation. And you know, there's a little bit here and there, but it's so easy. And it's easy to just bring somebody else on. And if you want to, you can actually talk with them face-to-face through their HD Faces component in GoToMeeting. And if you just want to share some desktop items or you want to do a whiteboard, or you want, it's just so many things you can do. And you can actually give the opportunity for the other party on your line to take over and share their stuff. I mean, great stuff with GoToMeeting. There's you know, this capability of seeing people or not, audio that's available to you as well. You can do it on your iPad, your Mac, your PC, whatever you want. And you could try it for free for 30 days, and I really encourage you to do so. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. And you can simply use it for 30 days, unlimited, for free. GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try Free button and use the promo code PODCAST. So we talked about the, let's see, we'll just kind of backtrack for a second here. We talked about the yen and how this could be a counter trend move on the yen right now, and it's an opportunity for all those players that are short to start covering, and this can be very interesting for you to take a look at. We talked about the short of Japanese bonds through a couple of ETFs and some of the things that go on there. Let's talk about some of the other action that's going on in the markets right now. Now, in particular, man, did you see gold? Did you watch that? That was pretty ugly. Now, you also know that we have, and I really haven't made the full announcement of this yet because there's a couple of things we're working on, but we have indicators. We have these indicators that we've been working on with our partner, Task Professional. And these indicators are, they're basically a market profile-based a system that allows you for you to find and get a kind of a transparent look at where the buyers and sellers are and where the zones of consolidation and expansion are and where you have the kind of fast drops or rises in a position. And one of the things we saw that was really interesting was that over the last few days, we saw that there was a lineup of timeframes. So what we saw was that the daily, the 60-minute, the 240, 30s, were starting to line up pretty well to the short side. And there was this kind of break-off point that was very vulnerable for gold. Now, it happened very quickly. So, you know, sometimes you can get in and can't get in. It depends on how often you trade, how you're trading, your swing trading, your day trading. Are you kind of longer term? You know, if you're longer term, you may not have been able to caught this. I mean, probably this is maybe for the swing traders, but the day traders in particular, that were able to kind of capture some of the short side of this. I mean, we're talking about close to 5% drop. The question is, where does it end? That's a good question. Now, we looked at a few of these charts and all. There really isn't a lot of support going way back. I mean, you got to go back months and months and months to find any kind of reasonable support levels here based on our models. And I mean, you got 1474 is interesting. You know, you may see a little bit of a pop here in a counter trend move, just like we're going to see on the probably see on the yen at this point. But you know, I think that gold, I don't want to say it's in a point of being oversold or overbought. It is definitely at a point of some support here in the 1474, 1475 level that it did in fact drop to on Friday. There was a couple of flushes down that were just outright ugly. Now, let's kind of go into why this is. What's going on with gold? Is everything just fine and the economy's great? There's no inflation. There's nothing happening. And, hey, that's just wonderful. Or is it something else? Now, I think, yes, we have seen patterns that you can identify on a technical basis. But also, I think it was really more so the final straw because there was a big seller coming out and the opportunity with this downtrend happening and now this catalyst where you see this, you know, the seller coming out. And we're not talking about a small seller. We're talking about Cyprus as, you know, the first. Because the ECB said and Eurozone said, hey, you know what, guys, listen. Miracle of miracles. There's more money that you need. And it was discovered after the fact, wink, wink, that, you know, you need to have in order to make sure that, you know, you can handle the bailout and cover your debts and satisfy all the requirements and all that. Oh, my God, what a surprise. What a surprise. They need more money than they originally thought. Sheesh. So what they said was, you know what, maybe you're going to have to sell your gold and some of your commodity holdings and all that. And that kind of unleashed a major monster on the downside. So the other thing that you have to know is something that I've been concerned about for a long time. I may have talked about this, but there's something that's been kind of bothering me. And that is the massive amount of holdings in, for example, the ETFs that hold gold. They hold physically, these are physically backed by gold. We're not talking about futures. There may be some in there, but we're talking about like GLD has physical gold that backs the portfolio. Now, I always thought, you know, it's interesting. There's certain supply, there's demand and all that, but you have a pent-up demand and a level of demand that is always going to be there because you have these ETFs that have a requirement to have the gold, you know, held in storage. But what happens one day when there's a big sell-off? Or, you know, people decide that, hey, this is not the place I want to be anymore. And the company, GLD, you know, the ETF has to actually reduce their holdings because the investors are selling out. Interesting. You add that to selling pressure on the futures market and maybe a Cyprus situation that we saw, and now you all of a sudden have a gold glut that is going to be coming out for sale. And what you get out of that is a major problem. Now, I talked about this with a few people, and they said, well, you know, there's always supply demand, and, you know, if they're selling, somebody's buying. And yeah, but the fact is that right now the supply demand is capped at kind of, you know, where things are. And with the understanding that there's this massive amount of holdings that are theoretically going to, you know, stay about where they are, give or take a little bit inside of the major ETFs that have the physically backed gold. But again, I keep pressing, what happens if there is a big sale of this and all of a sudden prices go down and then it kind of builds on itself and it builds on itself And then all of a sudden, you have prices going down, people running for the exits, and at the same time, you have, you know, all this gold coming to the market, and poof, you have a major correction, if not a crash, in gold. Now, any of the gold bugs out there would tell me, okay, wait. Gold is a physical asset. It's, not just a piece of paper. And think about what happens when stocks do that. Yeah, well, stocks do that, but nobody's holding, except for retail investors, this kind of block of, well, and companies, block of paper, if you will. It's a kind of a different situation where, you know, when you flood the market on it, it's a problem. Now, that may happen across the board in stocks if all of a sudden there's a big panic and all that. Yeah, that's, I understand that. And the value comes down because the bids just naturally come down with the ratio of what people are willing to pay versus what stock prices are on an earnings basis. Okay, I get that too. But again, it is a very big worry because it has not been tested. Because the ETFs have only been around for a certain period of time. And really, from that period of time, they've really helped to bring the price of gold and other types of things like silver up. I mean, silver is in a correction in bear market now, over 20% down from its high. And gold is back down there again. While at the same time, we're seeing that countries are printing money at a level that we have never seen before. And that doesn't make any sense. If the idea was to hold a physically backed piece of something, I don't care if it's a rock, I don't care if it's gold, I don't care if it's, beef jerky. I don't care what it is. If the idea that it has some value because it's an alternative to cash, which could be have a diminishing value as countries do devaluations, then it should hold. Okay, but what if a glut of it comes on the market? Let's not even start talking about what happened with Bitcoin in the last couple of weeks. Alternative currencies, you know. So for all those people that are gold bugs and all that, I get it. I totally get it. If you are a big believer in a bull and the long-term bull on gold and simple correct, I get it. All I'm asking you to do is take a look at this concept that I'm bringing up here, which is that the demand has really been driven by, not only people that are buying maybe coins and maybe the futures markets and all that, but because of the massive amount of gold and other types of commodities that have been held inside of these ETFs, and that includes oil, and we saw what happened to oil last week. Finally, it broke. Finally, after wondering, why is this thing at the 97 range, and we're seeing the inventories at massive highs, and that just can't stay forever. The actual physical backed gold dropped about 2% last week in GLD because there were some sales that had to take place, of course. There was distributions and redemptions that happened, and it couldn't be met by just the cash that was in the portfolio. So they had to actually sell off some of the physical gold at a time when Cyprus worries were happening about them selling off the gold, and it just started a massive kind of blowout on the downside. Now, was that the capitulation point after some drop over the last, several months? I don't know, because, we really didn't end at the lows. We did pop up pretty nicely at the end there by $20 or something like that. But, I mean, at one point it was down, I think, $89 or $90 for the day on Friday. And that's a pretty severe move on gold, and not to mention what happened with the gold stocks, the gold-related stocks, and the junior miners. It was just an absolutely awful, awful day. And, again, that's with the fact that there's all this money printing going on. But these are the unintended consequences. This is the collateral damage that I've been talking about with the great yen experiment that has forced the dollar to move higher in general and has really done just 1 week's worth of damage, pretty much blew up the gold and silver market. I didn't blow it up, but it definitely caused some harm to it. When, in fact, the idea of the yen experiment is to inflate assets. Dennis Gartman talks about buying gold in yen terms. And all that didn't work out well either. That was a pretty miserable day. The yen actually rose in value, and that's bad because when you're trying to kind of short yen and go into gold, I mean, you get it on both sides. So you had that trade on, probably was down about 6 or 7% on Friday alone, about 6.5% probably. And that reversal, when you do reverse that, where do you go? Well, you buy back your yen, right? Which goes into my discussion about a potential reversal of trend, or at least a partial kind of move on the yen coming up. So what we may see is the yen start coming up in value here, Japanese bonds possibly dropping, the Nikkei dropping, and kind of money coming out of the equity markets and the places that this money was squeezed into as all these shorts were pulling money out of the yen and looking for alternative investments. That's what my biggest concern is right now. Because I think the artificial move last week was on the stimulus package of the yen. So that's what happened there. So a combination of issues just kind of collided right in a row. You had Cyprus, you had the ETF sell, you had kind of gold in a downtrend anyway, and all this was going on, and boom, just hit pretty hard. The other thing that we're talking about when it comes to overseas is this whole issue about what's going on with this new strain of bird flu that's going on. You've been following this, I'm sure. H7N9 is the new strain, and the problem is that this is it's come together with a duck and a pigeon and a chicken, and there's all this kind of mutation that's going on with this particular strain that really does some very serious damage for those humans that are contracted. And there is no particular, there is no cure for this right now. And the problem is the detection of it is even more difficult. And there's already been going on massive poultry culling that's been going on and killing off. And, one of the big things is that we saw a report out of Yum Brands, who has a major footprint in Asia, and particularly in China, in the Kentucky Fried Chicken market. As crazy as that may sound to people, it's true. And they're already seeing that they're going to have a pretty significant slowdown because people are avoiding chicken. Just avoiding it. They come out with a report. The stock is down like 5% after the report. And, of course, we know what happens next. The buy and the dip buyers come in and they buy it up because it's such a deal at this point because we don't believe what's really going to happen and things are going to get better in the future. That's the underlying sentiment. That's what goes along with the concept of buy the dip. Okay. So now what happens is that Yum Brands, in our opinion, is very vulnerable. Because if we see this condition, this H7N9, start to spread, and it has been spreading, by the way, more and more cases are being reported right now, and more deaths are being reported. There's going to be some real concern in the Chinese markets about chicken, and that is going to directly be felt in the Yum Brands overseas markets. And I'll tell you something. It doesn't hurt to consider shorting Yum Brands. It's a great company. There's no question about that. And they've done well and, built just a great empire in terms of what they do. And they are diversified outside of China and all that, of course. But they have a major amount of their revenue that does come from China. Now, that being the case, it's worth the opportunity cost to look at a short position on it. And we're actually short Yum Brands, and something that we may actually look into increasing our exposure to as we see the continuation of this terrible virus spreading. There's also the stocks we mentioned last week. As a matter of fact, on Friday, they came in a little bit during the week, and then they started to ramp up again. On Friday, BioCryst was up, I think, about 12 or 13%. BCRX was one of them we mentioned. SVA is another one we mentioned. There's a variety of them out there. You got the big companies also, like Glaxo, and the companies that will have a influenza treatment, or at least quote unquote cure, which really isn't a cure, but it just deals with the symptoms of it and kind of does a little bit to help the situation. But the question is really what is being affected by this particular strain right now. Now, the biotechs that I mentioned, really there's no cure. There's no real major sales going on right now because they're still in the initial stages of finding out what this whole bird flu is all about, how much it's going to spread, the containment factors, the mortality rates, and the actual symptoms and where it attacks, right now. I think there's right now at a 22% mortality rate. Now, that's going to be kind of hard to really gauge. We don't really know if we're going to get good information out of China, but we're also seeing the same thing happening in other Asian countries while it's still starting to spread a little bit. One of the things you may want to look into is the things like the thermal imaging cameras that they have in airports that may see some heightened buying going on there. Scanners, masks, like a 3M has the masks that are going to probably be in big demand. And you have to worry about what's going to happen with companies like Yum if they're going to see a major amount of people not going into their establishments to buy anything because they're so afraid of contracting this thing. And especially if it's as deadly as they're saying that this one is, you know, I wouldn't risk it, even though it's cooked. But who knows? You don't know going into a restaurant the level of, you know, how they've cooked it and where they've gotten it from. And, it, you know, if there's any kind of question whether or not you can contract it from, you know, simply eating a piece of fried chicken or a chicken nugget, I guess, then I think people will stay away. And that may be a short-term development, but, you know, depending on how severe this thing gets, there's going to be a big problem. In addition to that, if they are killing off these chickens and they have to still buy them, the prices may eventually actually go up for chickens because this is the simple supply-demand again. So it all gets back to supply-demand when it comes to markets. Now onto what we have to talk about, which is earnings. We're in the heart of earnings season. Last week was the official kickoff with Alcoa. Not a great earnings number, not a great outlook, although the CEO over there is rather, he's always positive. He kind of thinks very optimistically, and that's good. We saw J.P. Morgan. We saw, you know, Wells Fargo. J.P. Morgan's numbers look like they were boosted by some change in the reserve requirements and a few other things and loan reserves and all. But, you know, again, not a great showing of, hey, wow, look at the earnings growth. Look at the revenue growth. Great stuff. You know, already we're noticing that there's been a lot of companies and analysts bringing down estimates pretty substantially over the last, I don't know, over the last few weeks, and they continue. Let me kind of go through some of the names that are going to be reporting this week and what to be looking for. We also have a post on thedisciplinedinvestor.com that will have all of these and much more, many, many more. There's a few hundred that will be reporting. And from the key levels, I mean, we're talking about, I got here, 75 or 80 key companies that are really important companies that will really shape what's going to come. Because we have, for example, Charles Schwab will be coming out with earnings before the market on Monday. Estimates are for about 16 cents per share. One of the big things about these brokerage companies is that they make more money when the yield curve widens and steepens. And that really hasn't been happening too much. But you also see that they all obviously make money if there's higher trading. You know, trading's been kind of, you know, moderately kind of staying the same, I guess. It really hasn't been moving when we look at the monthly numbers. So we'll see what happens with Schwab. We have Citigroup also coming out, looking at $1.17. Who knows? They'll probably come out with some ridiculous number. It's very, very difficult to really read into what these bank earnings are all about. We see Coca-Cola coming out on the 16th before the market. 45 cents per share is the estimate on about $10.9 billion revenue. One of the things you want to look out for or look at when you start looking at companies like a Coca-Cola, which has an international presence, is how much of the currency move for the dollar rising is going to be hurting them. We've already seen analysts dropping their estimates pretty substantially on Coca-Cola over the last 4 weeks on EPS, and not so much on earnings, but on EPS. Goldman Sachs will be out on the 16th. 386 is the number we're looking for, and about $9.6 billion of revenue. Intel is going to be very important after the market on the 16th because already we've seen the drive up of the Intel stock. The people are saying, hey, wait, this could be a good quarter and things are going to look good. And then we saw the big flop on that Thursday and Friday when PC shipments came in, estimated to be really, really light. Yahoo will be on the 16th as well. There's a lot of great optimism going into the Yahoo numbers. There's a big turnaround story. Johnson & Johnson on the 16th, looking for 26 cents. Nope, excuse me, looking for $1.41 a share on $17.5 billion of revenue. Abbott is also going to be out, the diagnostic and a pharma company. Let's see what else. Bank of America on the 17th. American Express on the 17th. Bank of New York on the 17th. And Bank of America estimates have come way down. According to the sheets that we're looking at over the last 4 weeks. Let's see. We've got lots going on here. We got SanDisk coming out on the 17th. The 17th aftermarket's a lot. We got eBay also. Sherwin-Williams, which has been a great stock, the paint company. They're looking for $1.09 on about $2.2 billion. They haven't really cut estimates there very much at all. That could be something interesting to take a look at. United Healthcare, we saw that big pop recently. When the rules changed about how much Medicare reimbursements are going to come, they're going to be on the 18th before the market, $1.14. They're looking for on about $30 billion of revenue. We also have Fifth Third Bancorp, PepsiCo, so we'll get a read-through on Coca-Cola at the beginning of the week. Morgan Stanley, I've never been a real big fan of Morgan Stanley. I mean, the stock has done well. Their estimates have come down dramatically. We'll see what happens. I mean, this whole list, really, I don't... who do I see? Let me take a look at this. SanDisk, their estimates went up. Kinder Morgan, PNC Financial. Looking down this list, it's hard to find any, really. That's it on this whole page, about 25 names I'm looking at right now on the second page here of our listing. And Verizon will be out for report. McMoran, Align Technology, they really had a... there's no estimate change there. Align Technology, which makes the Invisalign, I kind of like them. Although they had a really putrid number last number. Chipotle Mexican Grill is coming out on the 18th also. A lot of controversy with that stock. Sales and EPS estimates have not changed at all. Looking for about $2.13 on about $725 million of revenue. IBM. Now, are they going to meet? Well, maybe. Good news is, estimates have been lowered because we did see that Infosys number out of India. Stock dropped about 17%. Their outlook was absolutely miserable. Microsoft, looking for, let's see, 69 cents on $20.5 billion of revenue. Estimates have been just slashed. Google, the same thing. You know, when you see these estimates getting slashed like that, what you do know is that two things. That number one, that analysts are trying to play catch-up. And number two, the question is how far away is the stock from reality? One of the things that is being played right now, we've talked about this 100 times, is the whole beating the estimates game. You know, it doesn't really matter initially what happens when you look at the results compared to maybe historical levels and growth levels. I mean, it's all about what the analyst estimates are and if they beat or meet. And that's important because, of course, this market should be pricing the stocks and the names accordingly when you look at what the estimates are and what, you know, the stock price is. But that hasn't been happening so much lately. Nucor Steel Company, interestingly enough, estimates have been raised, looking for 28 cents on about $4.6 billion of revenue. Intuitive Surgical, interesting. We actually picked up a little short on those, the enterprise small position, looking for about $3.97 on $582 million of revenue. Intuitive Surgical has been in the spotlight recently because of some investigations going on with some of their machinery. They make a robotic surgical robotics. And one of the things you have to look at is the very expensive machines, very expensive, and whether or not hospitals are going to be doling out the money to be buying these right now. Honeywell will be coming out on the 19th before the market, $1.14 at about $9.5 billion. We have GE, the 19th before the market, looking for 35 cents. Man, another one that the estimates have been just slashed. That always concerns me because, you know, did they slash enough? Did they slash too much? You know, what's going on? McDonald's has been pretty resilient lately. They're coming out on the 19th before the market, $1.27 on $6.5 billion. Under Armour has been just absolutely a beautiful chart to look at. They're coming out before the market also on the 19th, looking for a measly 3 cents per share and on about $468 million of revenue. A couple more we have here. Let's see. We have Kimberly-Clark, which could see some problems with the dollar issue as well. Their estimates have been slashed about 19%, actually, on EPS. And they're looking for about a $1.34 on $5.2 billion. Schlumberger, another one with estimates slashed dramatically, looking for 99 cents on $10.7 billion. And State Street Bank Corp, and then Royal Caribbean. Royal Caribbean actually had their numbers increased. Maybe that's because of all the problems we're seeing with Carnival, and Royal Caribbean is an alternative in the same class, and they're coming out on the 19th. Estimates are about for 18 cents on $1.9 billion. There's a whole list of others there as well that I didn't even get to because it's a pretty thick list of stocks, and what we have is a estimate, how much they've changed over the last 4 weeks on both sales and EPS, and that will be up on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, so you can take a look at that where we post all sorts of things on a regular basis for you to kind of understand, know about, you know, so that you could be a better, you know, investor. That's the bottom line on all of that. But the big thing that I think we want to really focus in on when it comes to earnings also is the outlooks. I mean, there's been a bit of an investor, we'll just look at, say it, not believing, overlooking the estimates that we see with companies. I mean, look at what happened with Bed Bath & Beyond last week. Bed Bath & Beyond comes out with a number. They kind of, you know, they met and, okay, all was great with what's going on. But they got it down pretty significantly. And you got... If you look at the headlines that you see around the media, you see that there are some that say that they've really reduced their estimates quite considerably and some that say that they've increased it. kind of a crazy situation. From what we see, they've really slashed their outlook. And what happened was the stock ran up after their earnings, which was really surprising, and then peaked out about 3.5%, 4% up after hours. And the next day, it was up, held up pretty well, and then ended down about 2.5%, 3% on the next day when reality set in a little bit. Well, fast forward one more day, and of course it was down, so why not just buy? Even though retail sales numbers were down, and even though they projected a lower sales number and lower earnings over the next quarter or so, you know, it has nothing to do with fundamentals right now on a lot of this. It really just deals with, hey, can I make a couple of bucks on trading a stock that was down and we may see an opportunity to pick some up? I think that's kind of the environment that we're in right now and something you need to pay very close attention to. So you're going to look at the yen. You're going to look at the trade that's been spawned off of the yen. You're going to look at earnings. You're going to look at the economics that are coming out. We have a lot of housing numbers coming out next week, and we'll see what happens there. Housing stocks have been kind of bobbling back and forth in a range recently, and there's a lot of anticipation and hope that there's going to be some continuation of the good numbers that the housing market has on existing and new home sales. And you know, I wouldn't disagree with that, you know, because we are seeing some pickup in a lot of areas. But the question also becomes, you know, what happens to profitability over time? I will tell you that many of these companies have brought down the cost to actually build a home to ridiculously low levels. I mean, surprisingly low levels. $40 per square foot, you know, $25 per square foot. I mean, there was a time that they were in the 70s and 80s. So you have a combination of maybe material prices coming down, a better use of their projects, employment, and their margins are much better. I mean, that's all good. There's no question about that. There's no question about that. And as commodity prices that they use in the building, whether it's copper, lumber, you know, whatever it may be, is coming down, that's actually good for them. At the same time, though, you know, how much are the banks going to lend? And if the yields are still as low as they are and the yield curve doesn't expand and they can't make money on this and they have a fear of interest rates going up in the future, because now the Fed is saying, hey, you know what, we're looking at least an exit plan sometime in the future. Jamie Dimon comes out with his commentary that, hey, we're thinking that, you know, rates are going to jump. I don't know exactly when, but they're going to start moving and we're getting ready for that. Well, getting ready for that, I think, is code for we're going to slow down on our loans, because, you know what, we'd rather not lock in rates right now. We want, you know, some things in the future where rates are going to be a bit higher and we can make more money on this deal and the spreads will be a lot better. Right? Think about it. You got to kind of think underneath what a lot of things are being said and, you know, kind of not just look at the tip of the iceberg on the top, but kind of below the surface where most of the iceberg really resides. You ever think about that? Think of the news, the headline, like an iceberg. All you see is the top sticking out there. But below that is the guts of the story, just like the iceberg, maybe, you know, 15, 20 times larger in height underneath what you're seeing just sticking out on top. And that's how the news cycle works. Let's finish up on the discussion of Europe, because we're starting to see a very strange kind of move where there's commentary coming out of Europe, like we saw what happened with Cyprus, where they basically said, hey, you know what, clip the depositors and we want you to sell your gold. And, you know, we're not really going to just be sitting here bailing out everybody here because we're creating a moral hazard and we're creating, you know, a situation where nobody does reform, nobody does any fiscal policy. And, you know, they just keep on, you know, building the debt and just, you know, if all else fails, just land on the ECB and the Eurozone to bail them out. Well, now Europe, and particularly in Germany, there's been a kind of a conversation that's been growing that has been talking about they want to kind of start looking at the sharing. They use some other code words, but that's what it is. It's sharing of the responsibilities, the liabilities, the costs of bailing out the banks. It really needs to be first and foremost on the shoulders of the individual countries. And then, you know, if all else fails, maybe come back, but there's going to be some major changes to what happens. And maybe there's going to be some discussion of how there's going to be further haircuts, which really haven't happened to a degree. There's going to be write-downs. There's going to be clamps put on things. You know, we saw in Cyprus the continuation, even though it hasn't been very newsworthy, it seems, but the continuation of capital controls where people can't take money out of the country, they can't only take a certain amount out of the banks. You know, we've also seen that there's some numbers coming out of Italian banks that show there's a massive amount of withdrawals happening, which makes total sense. And the question then is, where does it go from here? If the discussion is slanting into the commentary that, hey, we've helped you this far, you haven't done the things that you're supposed to do, you're asking for longer terms on the payback and on getting your debt to GDP better, like we saw last week with a few countries. And, you know, how much longer is this whole thing going to go on? Because we thought what we were doing was, you know, giving you the liquidity that you needed in order to stay afloat and to get your house in order and to make sure that, you know, you were doing the right things, cutting back in the right places, and creating an environment and a business that was going to be self-sustaining. But what we're finding is that all we did was sustain what looks like to be the inevitable, which is no changes happening in-house, no major business changes, still, you know, getting swallowed up by the debt that they overlent and overreached on. And it's just not something that we're going to be sitting here, paying for. And the German citizens are pissed off as can be. And you have other countries that are like, you know, wait a minute, how come you're not doing anything more than just handing out money here? And it's starting to come back to roost that there's only so much, even though Mario Draghi is doing everything he can in words, primarily to hold the euro together and the eurozone together and making sure that the euro is going to continue as a single currency. You know, but when the dam breaks and when kind of the magic wears off, where are we? You know, have we seen a lot of changes? Just look in the United States. I mean, have we seen changes with the banks? They're still speculating like crazy. We have zero interest initial loans coming out with adjustable rates. We have securitization that started up again. We have, a no income check loans that are going on. I mean, kind of getting back to all the things that happened. There was supposed to be reform in the credit card area, still seeing 20% rates on credit cards. And, you know, people are borrowing and the debt that they are accumulating is going up again. And savings rates have been fluctuating a bit. They're putting more into savings, but still at the same time, they're really, it's disadvantageous to put money in savings because there's no interest that you earn on it. At a bank, at least. So they're being forced into these different directions and nobody really knows. And the Fed doesn't even know how this is all going to play out in the future. They don't know if these operations that they're doing are actually going to last. In fact, there hasn't ever been a time when we've had interest rates essentially at zero for this long of a period of time. And the question is the collateral damage and the after effects of all this. How does it all play out? And do investors and people get too used to these kind of rates? I mean, it's almost hard to believe. There was a time that you'd have to pay 8-9% for a mortgage. It was hard to believe that you got 10% on a CD, a short-term CD. It was even harder to believe 18% back in the 80s that you got for a six-month or even a three-month CD, sometimes even a 60-day CD, you'd get, you know, 17 or 18% on. It seems almost like not only another time, but another planet. How could we ever get back to something like that? How could that actually occur? I mean, what would be the driver? What would be the reaction? I mean, it's really hard, I think, for most people to envision even interest rates that we have now at zero. And, you know, let's just talk about a CD going from, you know, sub one to what, two, three? That'd be unbelievable. That'd be the equivalent move, and particularly on bonds and the pricing on bonds, from, let's say, a 3% to a 6% move. But it would happen much faster. A quarter point move to 50 is 100% increase. 3% to 6% is 100% increase. You would see a pretty significant move on the pricing of bonds, maybe not as major as a 3 to a 6, but, you know, pretty significant. If you went from 25 basis points to 1%, you know, that's a big move. That's a pretty substantial move in the percentage-wise, and the skew, what we call it, or the movement of the bond in relation to that could be very dramatic. And then that caused all sorts of other issues to happen, right? Because the government will have to pay more eventually on bonds and bond prices will go down. So the holdings of the Fed are going to go down in value and you're going to see kind of a movement out of bonds. Where do they go? Maybe stocks, maybe savings, wherever they go. But the fact is that there is a lot of things that are starting to erupt that are changes. And I think that the biggest issue that we have to really kind of think about is earnings. Will investors kind of slough off if there's a negative earning, and will that continue? Or are we going to see some reality set in here? Or is it just, you know, just throw it to the wind right now because all these central banks around the world are just being stimulative. And there's no, doesn't seem like there's any reason for them to do anything else. Although we are seeing, you know, China markets having some problem because they're really pulling back on their property areas, and they're actually doing all sorts of operations to reverse and drain some of the money from their economy at a time when there's a question as to whether or not exports and GDP and their manufacturing numbers are really holding up as much as they are. And aside from Japan, which is just in a disaster area, by the way, the Nikkei up about 57% or so in the last, November, December, about 6 months. That's pretty substantial, especially if earnings aren't anywhere near where they should be for that. And you have a very big jump in the EPS versus earnings, or the PE ratio, as you call it. And that's kind of interesting because you'll see a very harsh reaction of the Nikkei to any kind of moves of the yen, because that's what it's all been playing on, is the whole idea that we're going to see a major devaluation of the yen, which we've seen, and then the after effects would be the stock market's jumping. So all this is kind of, I think you could focus in and just watch the yen right now, and then the earnings, not so much the economics in the U.S., but that's important, obviously, but you watch the yen, how that plays out, and then where the money flows, trying to track the money, where it's kind of coming in and in from and out of, and see if there's some logic there, and if that can give you a really good benchmark of kind of what's going to happen with the markets, and if, in fact, the last couple of weeks are just a taste of what's to come in terms of whether the downside is the real thing or the upside. Because right now, really, you could kind of toss a coin and say, you know, it could be either way, and I think it will be dependent on the yen's issue and earnings at the end of the day. That's the bottom line. That sums it up. Anyway, thanks for joining me. Check out Trigger Point Research, of course. You got, especially right now with earnings season, where you're going to see some big moves on stocks. And if you can kind of get in on either side, and we have that alert that comes out, you know, maybe make a couple bucks. And there's a free trial, 14-day free trial over at TriggerPointResearch.com. We will have a link on the site. And if you want to be in commodities, we have the auto trade program that you can have your broker's account set up that it auto trades our signals. We put out that many, maybe I would say less than or about six a week, maybe, you know, buy and sell, covering oil, covering the euro, the yen, wheat, corn, soybeans, NASDAQ. Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there, about 9 or 10 different instruments that we use for the commodity alerts. And it's really kind of a neat thing when you see how that works, especially that the I just got an update of the Trigger Point Research equities, and I think it's up about 9% with very little drawdown since in about one year. So, kind of being in and out, not buy and hold here by any means, really has a nice little slope to the upside there. So you could check that out over at Trigger Point Research and get your 14-day free trial right now during the earnings season, which is kind of the time when things really start moving. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your ears. I appreciate the reviews you put on iTunes. Thank you so much for that. And of course, if you want more information about the indicators that we talked about, they're available on TradeStation, eSignal, Ninja, Trade Ninja, Ninja Trader, OEC platform, MT4, Bloomberg. All of those have now have those indicators available, and many of them have free trials. So you can go over to the Strategy Network over at TradeStation or TaskMarketProfile.com. Check out the eSignal or NinjaTrader, whatever you use, and you can get some looked through to what those do and how they are showing what the levels are, and make it a pretty easy game if you're going to be doing some either swing or day trading. Good stuff. Hey, thanks for joining me. Andrew Horowitz here, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.